Hello, welcome to Universal Soul Love. This is David Levy, detective. Unfortunately, we don't have Dr. Lana Love with us today. She's homesick with her children. But we have a great show for you today. We have attorney Stephanie Calabrero, who's a specialist in legal issues around reproductive medicine. We're very grateful to have Stephanie with us today as our special guest. I've been trying to get her, I believe, since January. When we first made contact, Stephanie has represented nearly 2,000 clients, including parents, surrogates, and donors from all over the world through surrogacy, egg donation, sperm donation, embryo donation. She specializes exclusively in family formation and reproductive law and has appeared on so many media programs, including The Examiner, Creating a Family Program, NPR, Fox News, Los Angeles Times, the Union Tribune, and the LA Daily Journal a couple of times. And she's also the founder of the Surrogacy Law Center. Welcome to our show, Stephanie.
Well, thank you, and thank you for that introduction. That was
Yeah,
really nice.
absolutely.
I'm happy to be here, even though it took a few months. But our schedules didn't match up, so.
They never seem to. Everybody's always, it's very difficult to arrange guest interviews. So I'm very appreciative that you were able to make the time to come on with us today and do this.
Absolutely, happy to do it.
Yeah, and I know you have had your own personal fertility journey, and you talk about that in your bio. So I know we have a lot of female listeners who have had these issues, and I thought this would be fantastic to do a show on the emotional issues around fertility and the legal and ethical issues around egg donation, sperm donation, and just I guess this is such a broad topic, and although Lana, it would be great to have Lana's input, but I'm an investigator myself, so I understand how complicated laws can be and how they sort of they can often put up barriers, and you really have to know, especially in the United States. I've worked in, as a detective, I've worked with in criminal defense and with domestic issues, and I've worked as a guardian ad litem. So I've missing children. I've worked in
Wow.
all kinds of legal fields, and I've certainly most of my clients were with law firms and individual lawyers. So I can, I appreciate what you're doing, and I think this is really great that you're doing all of this with surrogacy law.
It's a very rewarding job, I have to say, helping people have babies. There's nothing like it. Absolutely nothing like it. But it is a journey, and it's definitely hard. I mean, there are people. I was just reading about Tom Arnold. He's just pregnant with his second child, and it took him 21 IVF cycles to get pregnant. Now, granted, he didn't have to go through all the shots and, all the ultrasounds and the blood draws and the surgeries, but he participated. I mean, and he probably felt really badly because it was him. He has male infertility, which men don't talk about. So, yeah, Lana could definitely provide a lot of insight there. I can definitely talk about my journey and, the 8 years it took to get my children and the I did about 21 cycles. 10 of them were the artificial insemination, but then the 13, well, I guess that was more than 21, the 13 IVF cycles. So it's definitely grueling, and you lose a lot of self-esteem, and you definitely, there are times when you feel worthless, and you just really can't connect with people because you're just so unhappy because you feel like your body should do this because I've grown up. I'm going to be able to have babies because that's what people do. And for most people, it works, and for some people, it doesn't. So.
And what's that like? I mean, we don't often talk about male infertility and what that's like for men, but what is that like for women emotionally going through that? Like you just said, was wanting to that yearning to be a mother and not being able to, and really, I guess maybe feeling self-defeated and maybe even, inadequate that you can't have children. I've seen this, so
It's very lonely. very, very lonely because you don't talk really to your girlfriends because they're going to offer advice like, wow, well, you get to have a lot of great sex, or, you know, oh, well, if you just relax. Or they always say, well, I know this friend, and after she stopped trying, she got pregnant. You know, so they say things like that to you, and it's not helpful. It's not helpful because infertility is a disease. Truly, there's something wrong with you, either, you know, male infertility, female infertility, or both sides. So to discount it, because you wouldn't tell somebody who has diabetes, oh, just go on a vacation, you'll come back, it'll be all better. That's not quite the way it works.
Yeah,
so,
I
mean, yeah, there have been people who have, you know, gotten pregnant after going through IVF. I have a very close friend that happened, but, you know, that's not always the case. So it really is a struggle.
Yeah, I've seen how difficult it is, like you just said, with, I know this well, just when a woman, you know, sees, can't have a child and sees other women with infants and children and they say, why can't, I don't measure up, you know, I don't feel good about myself because why do they have children and I don't? And then they start bringing God into it and say, why did God let them have children and not me? Why did I have, you know, so many miscarriages and I'm meant to be a mother. That's my dream. A lot of women, that's their dream, is to become a mother and have children. And for some men too, you know, men have that reproductive instinct too to become a father. So I know exactly what you're talking about. I've seen it. It's actually devastating. I've seen some women that have become devastated as a result of not of being infertile. So
they are. That's okay. You can say it that way. It's like tomato and tomato, right? You know, the thing is that it's coming out more and more about men. Men are starting to finally talk about it. And, you know, I have to say, it's a man's world. I really think if it became more of a men's issue or, because it's always been a woman's issue. When people talk about infertility, they think of the woman. And if we bring it more towards the men, then I think the advocates who work in this field, like myself and others, I think that could only benefit people who need treatment. You know, in the United States, very few people have insurance to cover this. You pay for an IVF cycle $10,000 plus all on your own. And if you have to do another one, you pay for it on your own. If you have to do an egg donation, $30,000 to $50,000, you pay for that on your own. If you have to do a surrogacy, you find the money on your own, and that's $100,000 plus. So it's really not easy. And I think now they're starting to talk about, oh, there's two sides to this. I think, you know, maybe that might help.
And I guess you're right. You know, and I guess things are changing where this is becoming a men's issue. And certainly, you know, the gender gap, I hope, is closing. That's certainly one of my goals, is that thing that we have this equality. But, you know, what's interesting to me that I just thought of is that in the United States, like you just said, it's so expensive to get there's no insurance or a lot of money available to, or a lot of allocated to reproductive medicine. So it basically excludes people who can't afford it. And it's interesting that there are many medications like Viagra for men and Cialis and things like that. And I guess for some reason, if I'm not wrong, for men, you know, things like Viagra are often paid for through insurance, and it's seen as a medical necessity. But having a child is not seen as a medical necessity. It's elective medicine, isn't it?
You're absolutely correct. Viagra and Cialis were covered by insurance right out the gate. You know how long it took women to even get birth control covered? I'm not kidding you. The birth control pill that took, I think, what, 15 years? I'm not even kidding you. So yeah, if it's a woman's issue, it doesn't really matter. But if it's a man's issue, and right now the vets that have come out of the war, the Iraqi war, they're getting blown up with IEDs, and they're becoming infertile because they served our country. Resolve is putting together, and they're really advocating for a bill to change that so that the Veterans Affairs will pay for IVF for the soldiers who can't have a child, especially since they serve the country. You know, you served your country, you got wounded, you permanently cannot have a child, but, oh, we're not going to pay for it. And you know how much they make when they're in the military,
oh,
right?
Sure,
They
yeah.
don't really
So.
make a lot of money. You
Oh,
know,
my.
they don't, yeah. So, but we're not going to pay for that.
It's so interesting in Australia. I remember a man telling me that when his daughter was just about to be born and was born, he was in the Navy in Vietnam and requested to come home to see, you know, his wife and child in the hospital, and they said no. And I understand a war was going on, but I don't think there was anything going on at that time. I mean, with him, and he wasn't able to see his daughter until maybe 3 weeks later after she'd been born. And here in Australia, I noticed that, you know, they can actually volunteer to be in the military up until almost age 65, and they can request to come home for, they have maternity leave, they have, you know, they can come home for family matters and even for football games, Australian football. So it's, you know, things are very
wow.
different. Of course, our military is very different from Australia's military, and things are, culture is different, but it's just, it's just interesting to look at that and see how things are different in different countries. And so,
yeah, well, we don't really have maternity leave. So we have something called disability. So women go out before they're pregnant because their doctor says they're disabled and can't work. And then they usually get about 6 weeks afterwards, after they deliver, 6 to 8 weeks. And then they have to go back to work because their uterus goes back to normal. Of course, some man did put this all together. So a woman didn't put this all together. Because if a woman put this all together, it'd be vastly different. So there is no maternity leave. We have a Family Leave Act. So that's for caring for small children and, of course, a sick
right.
relative. So, but we don't have real maternity leave in this country. USA does not.
Right, I remember that.
So I don't think
sure.
they really value, yeah, I don't think they really value children and families like other countries do, you know, like France. Oh, my gosh. They put the most money out of any Western civilized country into their children.
Really? Okay.
They do.
Yeah, it's
yeah.
definitely different viewpoints, and I've seen that. You really don't know until you actually, you know, go out of the United States and you see how different things are in different parts of the world, even in other Western nations. It's a great learning experience traveling and seeing how things are different, but sometimes a little bit
oh
disturbing.
Oh my gosh, it is. I mean, I love the U.S., and I have to say, the IVF techniques, I mean, there's one reason why people come here. They are so successful. And, you know, this is how I had my babies, you know, after my 8-year journey. And the reason why it took me so long is because I kept trying to get pregnant. My doctor told me I needed a surrogate, but I said, and he also said, but you could try X, Y, and Z. And, of course, I decided to try X, Y, and Z. And finally, when I couldn't carry anymore, my uterus pretty much just gave out. I got the surrogate, and the first transfer got twins, and 9 months later, they were born. So you can't do that in most countries. It's illegal, surrogacy, in most countries. In Australia, you know, the surrogacy laws are upside down and sideways and every which way. And I know they're trying to reform them right now, but yeah. So this country, USA, has so many things to offer, but in some ways, you just kind of scratch your head and go, really?
No, it certainly does. You know, our medical technology is incredible. If you have the insurance or the money, and you know, if you don't, you end up with if you get injured, you end up with $1 million bill if you don't have insurance in collections
oh
and in bankruptcy.
God.
But I've worked with some bankruptcy lawyers, and I've done credit repair and everything else. I've seen all kinds of things in my life in the past 25 years, but in the United States. But it's fantastic in many ways. But it's interesting, in Australia, I know that egg donation is strictly altruistic, I believe, right now. So you can't
yes.
Sell your eggs. And I guess that's for ethical
no.
reasons. But.
Yeah, the UK is like that as well. And then both the UK and Australia, you cannot do an anonymous egg donation. It has to be known. And most surrogacy in Australia is altruistic as well. So But yeah, that's how Australia is. They really are trying to advocate for some really sound laws in Australia. So hopefully that's gonna come through. You know, and the UK doesn't have any really good surrogacy laws as well. So I know the attorneys over there are advocating for some good framework, because you know people are going to need help. You know, whether you can't carry on your own, there's women that are born without a uterus, women that go through cancer, you know, and then there's, you know, other couples who need the help of somebody else, and individuals to have a child. You know, you usually don't plan on it.
No, it's true. They have a great social social health system here, and in many ways, you know, there's a lot of advocacy here, and there's a lot of social reform going on, just like there is in the United States and probably everywhere else in the world. Things are always changing, and people are always trying to improve their conditions, and that's the positive aspect of, you know, human nature, is that it does want to improve, and we want to improve our quality of life. So I guess we always see that happening. I mean, we also see the other side of things where people try to, where greed and self-interest seems to oppress people, and laws are made to keep people down at the same time. That's why, you know, we have you here with the, what is it, the Surrogacy Law Center?
Yeah, it's the Surrogacy Law Center. Mm-hmm.
And
And
what are you doing with that?
So I've been in practice for about 10 years, but I decided to rename my law office, the Surrogacy Law Center, to really show what I do. So it really is helping people have babies through either surrogacy or egg donation or sperm donation. So I draft contracts and represent clients through that, through third-party parenting. And then I also, you know, petition the court to declare the parents of their child when a surrogate is giving birth to that child. So it's great work. You know, that yes, there are occasionally times when it's very sad and heartbreaking, but, you know, to have somebody, I just helped somebody in Sweden have two babies, and she was with me for 5 years. Yeah, 5 years, five surrogates. Oh, gosh, it was quite the journey for her. But she finally had her babies, yeah. And she's in Sweden, too, so she's taking a 2 years off because she can.
So it can be very fulfilling, and at the same time, it can just be very emotional. I remember that's how my work was, as a, you know, working with missing children and child prevention, and working with wards of the state. You know, it was... It could be, you know, one of my best cases was when I found a runaway when I traveled to Pennsylvania, and it was amazing. But everything just fell right into place, and I felt so good about it.
Wow.
You know, I'm not sure how it actually turned out in the end, you know, with all the issues. But I did my part, and I felt really good about that. But, you know, when I worked in Florida as a guardian ad litem, it was one of the worst experiences I think I've ever had, because I got
to
see how
work.
Oh, these, you know, just there's just so many abandoned children, so many lost children in the system, and it's such a dysfunctional system. There's just I don't know what the answer is, but I can't work in a dysfunctional system. It was so difficult. And I felt so bad for the lawyers and the investigators and the social workers that were basically all they could do was put out fires and try to take kids out of the home when there was abuse. They didn't have time to actually follow up on their case plans. They didn't know, you know, my kids, often they didn't know what medications they were on, or even, that, you know, when I would call the therapist, I haven't seen him in 3 months. And, you know, they didn't actually, you know, I would go in and see the judge, and I'd have to say, this child's needs are not being met. That's all I can really say, you know, and it was such a difficult thing. But, you know, I guess that's...
I can imagine. I think that this country, you know, women were, for some reason, you know, and I think other countries as well, women were property and so were children. And I think we really need to get away from that before, and until we do, we're not going to change how we treat children. And, you know, women have come a long way, but there's still much work to do. And I have to tell you, I've thought about being a CASA, which for people listening, I would be representing children in court, like you just said, who are in the foster system. You don't have to be an attorney, but a lot of attorneys do it. And number one, I'm so busy with my job, and you know, I have children, so it's really it would be really tough for me to do it right now. And then, like you said, I don't know if I could take working in that system and seeing how, you know, I can be effective, but the part where it's not, like you just said, and that would really frustrate me. That would just eat me up. I've volunteered before, but yeah, like I've done the domestic violence clinic, and that was great work, I have to say, helping those women and telling them, no, you can get away, you can do this. But I don't know if I could do that with little kids.
No, because I don't mind working with, you know, very passionate lawyers, and I don't mind working in the system, but I feel that I'm generally efficient, organized, and it's very difficult for me to work in a system that's overwhelmed and overloaded and people that are so frustrated that they have trouble keeping up. And again, I had enough of that just doing criminal defense, public defender work, for 20 years in domestic cases and infidelity, and I did child support. I did, you know, I was a constable. Yeah. I worked for the Department of Revenue, and I did so many things with child custody and everything else. And after, the negativity and the emotions really got to me, and I ended up writing and doing what I do now. Just because after 20 years of really being in the trenches, I thought that maybe I could be effective in a different way, doing personal growth or just something, trying something different. Because I do believe that, like Gandhi said, you know, the change that you wish to see in the world starts with you. It starts with each individual. And so the kind of change that you're talking about, where we stop seeing people as property, as human resources, and we see them as talented, skilled, valuable people, it's going to be difficult for social reform to happen. I think that's where we're going to be really effective, is in just sending out a very positive message to the world and saying you are valuable and you need to take control of your life and know that you're a powerful person, that you have natural rights, and that you have to advocate for yourself and seek out the help that you need.
Absolutely. There's another advocacy going on women. So there's a men they're starting to talk about just in the last couple of days. I'm not even kidding you. You know, men are starting to come forward, and we're starting to talk about male infertility. But women are also starting to come forward and talk about it. Like, you know, Jamie King, the actress, Kim Kardashian has been so vocal about it.
Really?
And she said she actually, on her show, she had, you know, the doctor, she showed her ultrasounds, you know, she just looked at him and said, I don't know how much more I can take of this. I'm so tired. And so she really showed what it was like to go through infertility and the ups and downs and the surgeries. And so women are starting to come out and say, listen, you know, I'm doing this, and it sucks. It's awful. Instead of, you know, my kids are going to be 14, so, you know, my last IVF cycle was almost 15 years ago or 14 years ago. So, I mean, and you know, I've been, you know, 20 years ago, and people really didn't talk about it too much. And now women are starting to come out and talk about it, because you're right. Until we really talk about it and just keep chipping away at, no, it's not just going to have sex. It's not going to work. I mean, Kim Kardashian had a very serious complication, a few of them actually, when she delivered.
Right.
She had preeclampsia. She had something called placenta accreta, where her placenta, which that's what feeds the baby, was growing inside her uterus. So she, and she never talked about that. You know, she never talked. She just said that she had an emergency C-section, but she never talked about it. I think that really kind of threw her for a loop, you know, and really just kind of rocked her world, because I think she probably expected to be like her mother, who had six children effortlessly. And she didn't talk about that because, right, her body's supposed to do that. So I think women are coming out more and starting to say, listen, it's awful.
It certainly is. I've certainly seen it firsthand. And it's wonderful that someone like Kim Kardashian's coming out and talking about her own personal experience with this, because we really need people like her who are, everyone should really be, you know, doing this. But certainly, I guess it has more of an impact when somebody like Kim Kardashian comes out and starts talking about these issues where she's a celebrity. So, and I don't watch a lot of television.
Who knew I'd be a fan?
Yeah. But I guess we should take a short break. And I just want to say we're also taking call-ins today, if anyone has any questions for you, if you don't mind taking them.
I don't mind at all.
Or, you know, it's always, or any, people can talk about their experiences if anyone wants to share. The number, the call-in number is 1-800-627-6008. 1-800-627-6008 for anyone that wants to ask a question or share their experience on infertility. And we're just going to take a short break, and we'll come back with Stephanie Caballero. Hello, welcome to Universal Soul, everyone. This is David Love. And today we have our special guest, attorney Stephanie Caballero, surrogacy lawyer, and we're talking about reproductive medicine, legal issues, and we spoke about Stephanie's personal journey and the difficulties in childbirth and many different things. We're having a great show. We're talking about rights and laws and ethics and all sorts of things. Hi, Stephanie. Welcome back.
Wow, welcome.
So I thought we could just start by just saying a little more about your organizations and the work that you do and how people can reach you with questions, legal questions, and about reproductive medicine.
Absolutely. So I founded an agency called Extraordinary Conceptions. My husband runs it, so he's sort of the face of the agency, but he does some matching, he and his team. So they match the surrogates and the egg donors with intended parents, so parents who are looking for them. And they help with the screening, and they help, you know, with the process. They really work closely with the parents and the, you know, the psychologists, the attorneys, and the many, many different clinics that they work with all over the country, and occasionally the world, but mostly all over the country, to help, you know, these people have babies. So they're really involved, and, you know, they really try to take as good a care as they can of their surrogates and their egg donors, you know, because they know that, you know, everybody is a part of it. And then I like I said, I'm also the founder of the Surrogacy Law Center, and that's my law office that I really have day-to-day involvement with, and working with my team on the contracts and the judgment of parentages and things like that.
So you're dealing with you're both dealing with the practical stuff, I guess. You're handling the business and the all the contracts and all the. And your husband's handling all the real medical issues, and
that's a good team.
That's a great collaborative effort there. It takes a lot of teamwork to get it all done, for sure. So you've got it all in one place.
It does. I think most people don't know that, you know, women, when they want to be an egg donor or a surrogate, they don't realize how long that process is. They have to complete a very lengthy application, and then the agency interviews them, detailed interview for an egg donor and a surrogate. They're similar, but they're different, because obviously a surrogate's going to carry somebody else's baby. So that's really, really, you know, something, you know, you have to think about. And then, of course, the egg donor, she has to be healthy. She's going to be providing her genetics. And then you have to meet with a psychologist and a doctor. And so when you meet with a doctor, you have to go through, you know, an exam, which includes an ultrasound, vaginal ultrasound, and blood draws. And then you meet with a psychologist and have to take a test. And, you know, really, when most women find out, they're like, okay, I'm out. There always has to be an altruistic component to it, even though in the United States, you know, you can get paid for donating your eggs because you're getting paid for your time and your effort, and you can get paid to be a surrogate because, again, you're getting paid for your time and your effort. But you can't do all that work. I always say, come on, think about it, especially a surrogate. She's pregnant 24/7. She can't just, like, go home at 5 p.m. and clock out and say, okay, take the belly off. You know, my work is done. It's not the way it works. And then after that, they have to meet with an attorney. So they go through all that, and then they have to meet with an attorney. And then they get to start the medical procedure. It's not easy for them.
It's challenging. It certainly is. I can't imagine that anyone could really just go blindly into this and think that it's going to be such a simple, you know, thing to do.
Yeah,
it's really nice to have that support and have people knowledgeable to guide you through it and support you all the way and have it come out successfully. And so what is this like for someone going through this? What kind of issues can they encounter? And, you know, what have you seen?
And the agency to really help support the surrogates and the parents, they actually have brought in a psychologist, Lana Wood Lovelace, in-house, because it's really important that, you know, the surrogate can say, oh, I need to call her, and have somebody they can call at the drop of a hat, or the parents. There's an issue, I need to. So there's somebody on staff that they can work with, yeah. So that's definitely been a change, and it's helped a lot. The poor gal's so busy, though. I don't think she's ever getting out of her office. But but yeah, but it's really important because, you know, sometimes you feel jealous because the surrogate's doing something that you can't do as a woman. I wasn't jealous because, good Lord, it took me so long. I didn't care how I got my kids. But I know if I had got the surrogate when my doctor told me would have, when he told me, you know, this is your best option, I would have been very jealous of her. I would have hated her. Part of me would have hated her for what she could do and I couldn't do. So it's not an easy thing. And then you have to know that the surrogate is not going to be you. She's not going to eat like you. She's not going to do the things you do. So you just have to know that. You know,
I can't imagine what that must be like, or the emotional component.
Yeah.
Something that would be, I just have no reference for it, but I can appreciate how that must be, though. So it's very nice that you do have a psychologist on staff that someone can just call up whenever they're feeling that they need that support. That's really great. And how can our listeners reach you, or anyone that's interested in finding out more about surrogacy or reproductive medicine?
Oh my gosh, they can just send me an email if they want to. It's Stephanie, and it's traditional spelling, so it's PH, and it's at surrogacy, and there's that hyphen, the dash, and it's so it's surrogacy-lawyer.com. So they can just email me if they want, or they could, you know, look me up at surrogacy-lawyer.com and call my office.
About legal issues, and what about extra conceptions for people that are looking to...
Extra Conceptions is www.extraconceptions.com, and they can just send an email to, if they want to check out the website, or they can just send an email to info@extraconceptions.com. If it's a parent or somebody, they can also send one to Mario@extraconceptions.com. He gets plenty of emails, but he won't mind.
Sure, I'm sure. And where is Extra Conceptions located, and where are you practicing out of?
We are in beautiful San Diego County, so we're in Carlsbad.
Huh? Nice.
Yeah, it is. It's really nice, I have to say.
And you have an office in Colorado as well?
Yes, we do. We have an office in Colorado, and we recently had Extraordinary Conceptions. They have an office in Colorado, and they also have an office in Texas. So,
wow! So you're quite large. You've got satellite offices in a few different places.
Good. The agency is quite large. Mm-hmm. They are. They really believe, and they really want to help as many people achieve the dream of having a baby.
What's the reality around that for people who, you know, may believe that this is only for the wealthy and that you have to have insurance for this? How can people actually do this? I mean, what have you encountered as obstacles?
Well, Yeah, people really think that they're wealthy, but when I did surrogacy, I was not wealthy at all. I mean, I don't have millions and millions and millions and millions of dollars. I had 10-year-old cars. My husband and I both had 10-year-old cars. I shopped at Old Navy, and you know, we didn't go on vacation. We went camping. There was no jewelry for birthdays and anniversaries. There was no cruise for our, you know, anniversary. We went camping for vacation. So you all our disposable income went into our IVF treatments. And I think I was very fortunate, though. It was before the Great Recession, so we borrowed against our 401k. We used credit cards. And then we pulled equity out of our house. And then after the Great Recession, that was really difficult for people. Oh, my God.
I remember. I was there for that.
Yeah, weren't we all? I never had so many clients cry because they just didn't have the money and they felt like they were running out of time, especially women. Egg freezing hadn't even really started, and it's still not a wonderful technique is IVF, but it's so much better than it was then. So these women would just be desperate. They'd be 37, 38, not have the money. So after the Great Recession, what people were doing is they were borrowing money from their families. So people were doing that. And the thing is that if you can't afford an agency, then, you know, find a friend, find a family member, find a friend of a friend. I put this big old email blast out there, and I'd really stopped talking about, you know, what we were doing when we were doing IVF, and I really had just become kind of internal, but I finally said, you know, I really researched agencies, and I'm like, I'm tapped out. I've done, you know, how many IVF cycles? I've done 12. Before that, I did all these artificial inseminations. I am tapped out. I cannot afford an agency. So I just put this email out there and just told it like it was. Listen, this is what we've been through. This is all the miscarriages, surgeries. I can't afford an agency. I need somebody to come forward and help me have my babies. And somebody did. So
that's great. You know, one of my favorite sayings is "there's a way to do everything." And I do believe that you can be creative when it comes to money. That there's so many avenues and so many options and so many opportunities. But you do have to really open up your mind and your imagination and you really have to be motivated. And if you really have a dream, you can do it. There is always a way. But you do have to think outside the box. The way I think of money is we create the money. You know, we're the ones, it's our talent, it's our attitude, and it's our education and our skills that creates money. Money is simply a concept of the mind, and it's not something outside of us. Money doesn't actually have any value. It's really just the energy of money. So we're in control, and we're the ones that spend the money. So I don't like to think of money as an obstacle, although certainly there's been times when I've gone without money, and you know, there's been lean times, and there's been financial difficulties, but life is impermanent, and as long as you're alive, there's a way to get through everything. Like you said, I think going camping is okay. I think it's good. It's good family values, and you don't need to go to, you know, Disney World every year or Paris or whatever. I mean, you know, we have to start thinking in new ways, like you said, even about in order for social reform to take place, we have to change the way we think about our lives and about the world and about money and about so many things. And then I think things will fall into place, and we can achieve our success. We can always achieve our goals, even with childbirth. And it's, you know, one of the things that's a shame is all the children that I've seen, the orphans and the children that have been abandoned, and as a lot of women I've seen who have had miscarriages say, you know, there's all these kids being abandoned from people who give them up to the state to go off and do drugs, and they end up in prison or whatever. And they say, you know, why won't God give me this baby? And here are these mothers abandoning their children and everything. So I guess it is very frustrating, but you really can't feel self-defeated. You've got to just stay on top and keep pushing, I think. Spiritual warrior mentality.
That's what I tell my clients, because you do get to that point. You know, you see people abandoning their babies, and you're like, really? And it just eats you up. And I tell my clients, I go, you can't ask why, because that just rips your heart out and tears your gut. And then I tell them, you can be a parent. You really can. it may not be the way you thought it was going to be, but if you
right.
really, really want to be a mom, you can do that.
This
you know,
true.
And it's so funny, you don't think you ever can. Infertility just kind of skews with your brain. And then I finally realized that, like, right after the transfer with my surrogate, we were taking care of her kids because the surrogate has to be on bed rest most of the time after the transfer to make sure the embryos stick in her uterus. And so we took our 4-year-old and our 2-year-old to this Christmas party, and all of a sudden I realized, wow, I could be a parent. What am I worried about? If this doesn't work, because I wasn't going to do it again, if it didn't work, I gave back all my meds to my doctor, said, here, give it to somebody who, you know, who's on their, you know, 20th IVF cycle. So here's all my medication. Here, I don't want it. If it doesn't work, I'm done. I can't do this anymore. And so, but I realized I could adopt. And adoption is not easy. Oh, my gosh.
No,
please,
no,
before
no,
anybody
that's not as well.
Ever says, why don't you just adopt, please go research how to just adopt. Yeah, that's
it's not even easy to adopt a cat or a dog in Australia or in
right?
the United States. So, you know, and while they're being put to death by the hundreds probably every day, you know, euthanized.
See?
So kind of.
Yeah, see?
Yeah. I guess everybody wants, there's liability, and they want to make sure that the parents are going to be able to financially support and emotionally support these dogs and orphans and give them stability.
They kind of go through a mini, you know, social worker. They do when you adopt a pet. But you're right. And even adopting a pet isn't easy. So why would you think adopting a child would be easy?
Right.
It's so funny. It's just like when people ask me, so how many times has a surrogate ran to another state and you've had to go get her? And I lean in, it's always at a party, right? And I lean in and I go, never. Because surrogates have their own life and their own family and their own children. They want to help you have your child. They don't want your baby. They want to, you know, go, oh, hello, look what I did. Hand the baby over to the parents, see their smile, and take a big nap.
Wow, yeah, that's an interesting fact. I hadn't even thought of that, but that's something that you might think about, you know, those kinds of issues with surrogacy parents or, you know, how that works and how they feel about that. And, you know, do surrogates ever want to keep the child because they feel like it's their child? But I guess you're telling me you haven't really seen that.
No, it's very rare when that happens, especially in California and other states where there's laws for surrogacy, because essentially she'd be kidnapping, you know, the parent's child. Right? So, you know, and kidnapping has some very serious consequences. So.
Yeah, I do know about that. I've done some work with, like I said, as a constable in child doing a child support recovery with the Department of Revenue in Massachusetts. And I've also done work with parental abductions and missing children. And they take it very seriously. And there's international laws. There's the Hague Convention. And there's, you know, the FBI can get involved. So it can be quite very not a good idea. Yeah, for sure.
Correct.
So there's a lot of laws in place to keep people honest and but I guess it can be very, but like those emotions really do come into play. So it's interesting times.
The surrogate is the hormone drop. She has gotten a lot of attention being pregnant, and she's gotten a lot of attention, you know, from lots of different people. And then after you know, are pregnant and you deliver, you know, you get attention because the baby. And so, you know, people have to realize that the surrogate probably needs a little bit extra, you know, just somebody to check in. You doing okay? Everything's okay? You know, that kind of thing. They're happy to get back to their life, but, you know, now that we're very much all aware about postpartum depression, I think that, you know, maybe more could be done with the surrogates afterwards just to make sure they're okay, you know?
Mm. Yeah, and you know, another question just came to mind about gay couples and single parents getting involved in reproductive medicine and having children. Do you see a lot of that?
I do. I help a lot of gay couples and a lot of singles. I actually have helped two transgender. They're transgendered women have children.
Wow.
So
We have a
just
we
like
have
Caitlyn
a
Jenner.
it, you know, we have a Lana and I, we have close friends who are they're actually they're involved, they're doctor, one's a doctor and the other one's the practice manager, the two women, and they have two wonderful children, what very well behaved, and they've been together for almost 30 years, I believe, and have a very good relationship, good family life. It seems, that the kids are very happy, two boys. They're young. I think they're both under 10, I believe. So it's interesting. It's very, it's interesting, that, to see this and, to see. So a lot of times, gay couples can do as better or much better. Their family lives, and their values can, and their children can be very happy and well-behaved and well cared for and emotionally stable. That's
Love
just
is
what I've
love.
seen.
That's right. Children want to be loved. They want to feel secure. They want to feel protected. And it doesn't matter if you're, to me, if you're gay or straight, if you can
Not at
do
all.
that, you're going to be a great parent.
Yes, and they are
Loving
great
parent.
parents, and in my mind, it makes no difference. And so
No.
I guess, I think it's important to just encourage something like this, just to encourage the family values, and the as long as children are loved and cared for and healthy and happy, that's what's really important. And you shouldn't be afraid to go seek out if you want to have a child and you happen to have an alternative lifestyle. I think that's okay, and I don't think religion or politics or anything else should come into play in that regard.
Absolutely not. I've helped hundreds of gay and lesbian and transgendered people have babies. I have these amazing gay couples in Spain. One has triplets, one has twins. Oh, I love them.
Wow.
I love all my couples, but some I get closer to than others.
Yeah.
So, and they love their babies. The one who had twins, both their mothers came. Oh my gosh, it was such an amazing day. It was so special. Mothers came and got to hold the babies. It was great. But yeah, they love their children. So this war on, gays shouldn't have, families and they don't have family values. I don't know where that comes from. I really
I don't
love
know.
the Generation X because,
That's
the
certainly on my
20-year-olds and the
view,
teenagers.
yeah.
They don't care. They're like, love is love. Who cares? I may not want to marry, same sex, but if that's your thing, well, I'm good that it's your thing.
We're
So
talking
I
about
think,
innocent beliefs. Yeah, we're talking about
Sorry?
innocent. Anyhow, I think people should have their innocent beliefs, but when people start enforcing views that are not that are sort of detrimental to other people's lives, we need to steer away from that. But anyhow, Stephanie, we've only got a minute left, so I just want to finish up. Very, very happy to have you on our show today. This was an excellent show, great discussion. Thank you so much for coming on, and I hope to have you back with your husband to talk more. Maybe,
Absolutely.
yeah. Okay. Do you, would
Yeah,
you
my
like to give
pleasure.
your contact information one more time, or any last words?
Absolutely. It's Stephanie Caballero at the Surrogacy Law Center and also founder of Extraordinary Conceptions as well. And I really just want to get the message out. If you want to help somebody or you want to explore surrogacy and egg donation or any third-party parenting, please do that. You really can be a parent. It's a tough road, but there will be an end, and it usually can be happy.
Great, and that's the final result that everybody should have, a happy ending. Okay, and this was a happy ending. Thank you so much for coming on our
Yes.
show, Stephanie, and we'll see you next time on Universal Soul Love. Take care.